Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Twitutin. Taking a sideways look at what happened this week in history. That's sideways in the sense of the film Sideways, which means that every week the cast and I neck about 10 bottles of red wine, look through the Wikipedia This Day in History section for 5 minutes, and just blurt out the first rubbish ideas that occur to our... that occur to our crapulous minds. crapulous means drunk, so don't write in and complain about that. We can't cope with another Wankel rotary engine style Ferrari. So, as always, I'm joined by my inebriated house band, Christian Riley and the Toll Puddle Martyrs. I like we did there, Christ, like the new two Ronnies. Well done.
Yeah, thanks. Rich, I was just wondering, have you seen TV's Emma Kennedy? She hasn't turned up this week.
Don't know who you mean.
Come on, you know, the short, cheeky woman who's usually here. You married her last series.
Not ringing any bells, Christian.
Some people say she's Morkish.
Oh, yeah, Morky McMork. Yeah, I think I think she's gone to America to pursue her career as a showgirl.
Isn't that what Dr. Crippen said happened to his wife?
Yeah, I suppose it is a bit like that. It's funny, isn't it?
It's just that you're always going on about admiring men who kill their wives.
Oh, and Christian, you're so cute and priceless. I'm a comedian. I don't mean a lot of the things I say. I don't admire them. It's nothing more than a grudging respect.
You did give her a drink from a bottle with a skull and crossbones on it.
Emma Kennedy is gone. Let's just forget her. A week has passed since she did leave, and I have to move on with my life. It's, you know, I can't. It's history. Anyway, I was asked to present this programme because I have a 2-1 in history from Oxford University. That's right, yeah. Look impressed, because it is impressive. Bad luck. Sharp. I could have been a professor, yet I eschewed all that to become a puerile scatological comedian. As a friend of my granddad genuinely said after hearing one of my early radio shows, what a waste of a good education. Screw you, my granddad's friend. You're dead now and I'm not, so... So who's won? It's me, deado. And the truth is, it wasn't a waste of a good education anyway, as I spent most of my time at university eating crisps, playing fruit machines, and crying myself to sleep. So I didn't do any work at all. I didn't get educated at all. I only managed to get through the 3 years there by copying all my essays word for word off of Paul Clegg, who did all the same tutorials as me, but the day before. I feel a bit guilty about it now because, you know, due to Paul Clegg's work, I landed this lucrative gig with a paycheck that runs into three figures. That's over the course of the whole series. Plus, I get all the Radio 2 groupies that Russell Brand, Jonathan Ross and Ken Bruce don't want. Rightfully, all that should be Paul Clegg. So I've decided I will pay Paul back for all his help by making him the new co-host of this show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Paul Clegg.
Hi, hello, Rich. Thanks for having me on the show.
it's the least I can do, Paul. I owe all this to you. Do you see that 48-year-old woman with the bleached blonde hair and tattoos in the second row? Yeah, because of you, I can have sex with her if I want.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's a good thing.
Oh, right.
So, are you excited about being propelled into the high-octane world of Radio 2 sketch comedy?
Not really, no. I'm not sure it's exactly my thing. My actual job's pretty exciting.
Oh, what do you do?
I travel around the West Country selling gentlemen's suits from Minehead to Yatton. I can actually get you a good deal if you like.
No, thanks. I'm not really a kind of suit guy. Suits are for squares, for businessmen in this. I'm cool, and that is uncool to wear. So no offence. Yeah.
No, it's fine. You are a bit old, aren't you? To be wearing jeans and T-shirts. I mean, you're 40 years old.
So. Shut up. I'm not 40. I can't be 40 because, look, I'm dressed like a teenager. So that's why I wear these kind of figure-hugging T-shirts, because I figure if I'm going to deny the fact I'm old, I might as well deny the fact I'm fat as well. This T-shirt I'm wearing today, it actually says, how much is too much? It's a T-shirt that, when I'm wearing it, asks and answers the same question simultaneously.
So, shouldn't we be doing a sketch or something?
Yeah, we definitely should be doing a sketch. What have you come up with?
Me?
Yeah, I told you if you're coming on and getting all the benefits of the Radio 2 celebrity lifestyle, you'd have to write some sketches for me to do. It's only fair. Right. You can now get to have sex with that tattooed woman.
Oh.
You're lucky. She only likes Radio 2 personalities and serial killers.
No, it's okay. I'm happily married with a family.
She won't tell anyone, apart from the tabloids. I don't like her.
Shouldn't you have written your own sketches, Rich?
Don't start with that again. It's just like the old days. I've been busy getting drunk and crying myself to sleep.
It is like the old days.
If you don't let me copy your sketches, I'm going to give you a Chinese burn. You know, I'll do it.
No, it's all right. Oh, look, there you go. But I'm not sure how good they are.
All right, let's have a look. Okay. Great. Oh, this one looks okay. So the 5th of December 1974, the final episode of Monty Python's Flying Circus aired on the BBC. Their most famous skit was the dead parrot sketch. Let's have a satirical look at it. You really need to put some... That's a bit dry, but that's good.
All right, okay, I'll just do work on
it. Just do the sketch. Yeah.
Do the sketch. You like this?
I wish to register a complaint. Hello, miss.
What do you mean, miss?
I'm sorry, I have a cold. I wish to register a complaint about this parrot what I bought from this very boutique just half an hour ago.
Oh, yes, the Norwegian Blue. What's wrong with it?
What's wrong with it? No, hold on.
This isn't...
What? What's the matter? What?
This isn't really a satire of Monty Python, Paul. This is just the dead parrot sketch from Monty Python.
Yes.
Word for word. Stop it. Yeah. But turn that Pet Shop FX off.
It's a good sketch, Rich. I mean, me and the lads at the warehouse, we're always quoting it. It always makes us laugh.
No, this is no good at all. You can't just copy things out word for word.
You used to do that with my essays.
That's entirely different. I was relying on you to get this done. You've really let me down, Paul. This is a farrago. We're going to have to regroup. So, ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome our band, Christian Riley and the Toll Puddle Martyrs?
Thank you. 7th of December 1949, the birthday of Tom Waits, and I just wondered how we might be celebrating this year. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
The sky is black, the night is torn, the moon is a blade carved out of bone. All my relatives stir down at the floor, because I'm buttering a kitchen tile with a fall. Happy birthday, happy birthday. Everybody act like you're having fun. Happy birthday, it's my birthday. Yo ho ho and a bottle of children's feet. I've invited a blind Mongolian knife thrower and his one-eyed assistant, while a German dwarf plays hopscotch with a dismembered doll, and my children are all crying. Why can't you be normal, Dad? I sail the forest of mankind. The twisted oak survives the woodcutter's axe. That seems to upset them more, so I take a dance with a tawny moor and eat a trifle made of wood. Happy birthday, happy birthday. Remember the never of December when the clock strikes 13. Everybody knows it's happy birthday to me.
Christian Riley and the Toll Puddle Martyrs. You know, the Toll Puddle Martyrs were the worst martyrs ever, in my opinion. They died so we would never forget Toll Puddle, whatever that was. The idiots.
Well, they didn't actually die, Richard. They were transported for forming a trade union, and Toll Puddle was where they came from. So,
well, like, shut up, Swatto. We're not, you know, we don't need to copy your essays anymore. Who cares? Just, no one cares about history. You're sharp.
That was great, Christian, by the way.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
Your bits are always my favourite, though, anyway.
Oh, that's really nice of you.
I mean, if you guys want some quality suits, I can sort you out. Top quality, honestly.
Hey, that'd be really great. Thanks. Suits can be a really cool look.
You're not here to sell suits, Clegg. You're here to write sketches. What have you got for me?
I got a sort of idea. December the 4th, 1154, saw the start of the papacy of the only ever English pope, Nicholas Breakspear, who chose the very English papal name of Adrian the 4th. Adrian? That's not very papal, is it? Wait for laugh. Okay. It could have been worse. It could have been worse He could have been Wayne the First, or Gary the First, or Nigel the First. I'm just choosing English names.
Yeah, I understood what you were doing. It's just not really very funny. Have you actually got a sketch or anything about this?
Yeah, I have. I just thought that maybe when he goes, you know, into the Vatican for the first time, he wants to do it up all English, you know, put stone cladding on the Sistine Chapel, replace the blood and body of Christ with Watney's Red Barrel and bread rolls.
Don't laugh at that. It's not funny. That's just hackneyed rubbish. You've got no taste.
The audience liked it.
They're laughing at you, not with you.
That'll do. That's good. Well, we could do it like the Having an English Sketch from Goodness Gracious Me. People love that.
We have to be original.
Rich, I have heard this show before.
I only ever copy myself. That's all right. That's allowed. Luckily for you, I've got something I can use for this as well, because although Adrian IV was the first English pope, a couple of years ago, this is completely true, I genuinely attempted to become the second English pope. When Pope John Paul II died, I decided that I would apply for the job of pope. I'm not going to keep you in suspense. I didn't get it. Okay, I don't want you sitting on the edge of your seats, but this is the letter that I genuinely sent to the Vatican to apply for the job. Dear Pope Finder General, that's who decides. Hi, my name's Richard Herring. I'd like to be the next pope. You might think me an unlikely choice, as I've never held even a minor office in the Catholic Church, but I think I might be quite good at it anyway. Here's why. Reason one, I am relatively young for a pope. If he keeps electing popes in their 50s and 60s, then obviously you're going to have to go through this rigmarole every decade or so with the... Is that black smoke or white smoke there? Can't really tell. Isn't all smoke essentially grey? Don't think you should come up with a clearer system for this after 2000 years. It's quite important, isn't it, really? I mean, I don't know, off the top of my head, maybe a bloke should come out onto the papal gantry, holds up a sign that says, we have chosen a new pope. You might go, well, no, you know, a lot of different Catholic people speak different languages, you need an awful lot of signs. No, and many Catholics are illiterate, which is why they can believe this stuff, because it's just still, you've got one sign, it's just like, on it, it's got a cartoon picture of like a generic pope, a white middle-aged man on it, with a tick by it. That's everyone understand that. That's if they haven't found one, turn it over. It's a cartoon picture of a generic pope with a cross through it. No, not on a cross, mate, that would be confusing and slightly insensitive. I'm only 37, I was when I wrote this letter, and two of my grandparents lived to be over 90. So I think there's an excellent chance that I could reign for the next 50 years. By which time, surely no one will believe in this stupid Christian mumbo-jumbo anymore. We can just shut up shop, job done. I don't know, maybe sell some of the treasure we've got in the palace, give it to the poor. I don't know, that's just a thought. Reason two, although I'm not very religious, and if pressed, would say I am an atheist... I do have quite a lot of experience of church. My mum and dad were Christians, C of E, I'm afraid. Hope that's not a problem. come on, it's the same thing, really. They forced me to go to church about four times a year when I was little. God, I hated it. It was so stuffy and sanctimonious. Once I got to about 25, I actually refused to go to church anymore. Even at Christmas, even though it made my nephews and nieces cry. I think it's important to stick up for your principles, no matter how clearly wrong they are. It's another reason why I'd be a good pope. But I do like some of the superpowers that Jesus had. They were pretty cool, and could do a good graphic novel on that, like Heroes or something. And the carols are pretty good. I'd be prepared to lie about my faith and tell people to believe stuff that no intelligent person would think was true, as long as I get the big palace, free air travel, unusual hat, etc. Reason three, I believe all people are equal and have a right to do whatever they want as long as they're not harming other people. I believe Jesus Christ said something similar. But like all the other popes, I'm prepared to just ignore this and say that I hate gay people, etc., as long as I get all the free stuff. I understand if you can't give me the job this time round, but hope you'll keep my letter on file for the next time this happens, which should be pretty soon given the way things have worked so far. C.1, NB the smoke. bad luck about John Paul. I am looking forward to being your boss. So that was the letter I sent. They didn't even reply, which I think is rude. I didn't seriously think I'd get the job. You know, it was just a little bit. I was just having a bit of a joke, trying to lighten the mood, difficult time. I didn't think I'd get the job. I thought I might get an interview, to be honest. But you can imagine how disappointed I was when they gave the job to an ex-member of the Hitler Youth. Before, if they'd said it would come down to be between me and someone who had served under the Nazi regime in World War II, I thought I'd get that. But because all my life, given a choice between Hitler and Jesus, I've always thought Jesus was the best. I think, you know, Hitler did some terrible, awful, really bad things. And I think the worst you can say about Jesus, you know, he threw those tables over. But, I mean, that doesn't compare with the Holocaust, in my opinion. I mean, you'd have to really like furniture to get across. They were just trestle tables. They weren't even posh, you know. I don't think he even broke them. But, of course, Pope Benedict says he prefers Jesus now. He's changed his mind. But what I want to know is, what if he changes it back again? It'll be embarrassing.
That was then, this is now. The show that prefers Jesus to Hitler.
Well, look, we've still got quite a lot of time to fill, Paul. I haven't done anything. Have you got anything else for us?
December the 2nd, 1814, the Marquis de Sade died.
Oh, he must have loved that, the pervert.
How about 8th of December 1980, John Lennon was shot dead by Mark Chapman on the steps of the Dakota Building in New York.
Right, well, what's funny about that?
Well, nothing. It was awful. I remember when it happened. It was a terrible, terrible day.
Yeah, really, with this show, we have to at least try and think of something vaguely amusing about
it. What's amusing about the death of a genius like Lennon? Nothing. You're sick if you think it is.
No, my point is it's probably best not to mention something like that. Look, it's created a bad atmosphere. It's a comedy show. It's bound
I'm
to be
I'm not
going to
laugh
bit...
at John Lennon just to get, you know, well, get these people on side. You know,
it's depressing for me, as Lennon was just over 40 when he died. What's really depressing is I'm now older than John Lennon ever got to. I look at what he achieved in his short life, what I've done, and I sometimes wonder if I haven't done as well as him.
Well, I think you should stop wondering. Because you haven't.
No, I mean in my own field.
No, still no. I mean, Mozart died this week in 1791 at the age of just 35. I mean, you've lived 5 years longer than him, and you're nowhere near as good.
You're right. I am rubbish compared to Mozart. He wrote Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star when he was still in the womb. Creating a primitive horn out of his mother's fallopian tube. I just don't measure up to any of these people.
I'm sorry. Look, well, maybe you should judge yourself by someone less prodigious. Shirley Crabtree died this week in 1997. Big Daddy, he was 67. And all he'd achieved in his life was to parade around in a gigantic back-to-front woman swimming costume, shouting, easy, easy, and bouncing off some ropes before hitting a bloke who was deliberately standing in the way with his belly. I mean, if you worked at it, you could probably manage that in the next 27 years.
Look, don't knock Shirley. He may not have written The Magic Flute or married Yoko Ono, but if Mozart or John Lennon had got in the ring with him, who do you think would have won?
Realistically, probably Mozart and John Lennon. They were young and fit and not gigantically fat.
But if they'd fixed it beforehand so that they would lose.
Well, in that case, probably Big Daddy, yeah.
Probably.
Shut up. Big Daddy is my hero. And I think he will be yours too when you hear this. It's the tape of his life story that I carry around with me at all times to inspire me.
It's an odd thing to do.
Ask any youngster in this country today who they would most like to be, and you will get only one answer. It won't be Johnny Rotten's or Benny Hill's or Prince Philip. Only one name will come up again and again.
Big Daddy!
Big Daddy!
When I grow up, I want to be Big Daddy, or failing that, Prince Philip.
Big Daddy is the coolest man in this country, if not the world. But it wasn't always so easy, easy, easy. Big Daddy was born in Halifax in 1930 with his record-breaking 62-inch chest already fully formed.
Oh my poor clacker!
Yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. Crabtree, you have a son, a beautiful, freakishly big, fat, bald son.
We should call him Shirley. Shirley Crabtree.
I don't think you were listening. He's your son. It's a boy.
I heard you fine, veterinary.
I'm a doctor.
We're calling him Shirley. My name's Shirley. My father's name was Shirley.
No, it was your mother that was called Shirley, Shirley.
Was it? Oh. Well, that explains a lot, thinking about it. Well, it would be embarrassing to admit that mistake now, so we're calling him Shirley. It never did me any harm, apart from all the constant bullying.
But I want to call him Daddy. Big Daddy.
But he's a baby. A largish baby that... In no way a big daddy. It would be confusing. Shirley Crabtree, that's his name.
You know, this reminds me of a sketch about a birth I attended to in 1910 of a girl called Agnes Gonka Bajonka. Her mum wanted to call her Mother Teresa.
It's all right to copy yourself.
Well, it's lucky because it's very similar.
It's allowed. Really...
Luckily, it was a year ago now.
When he got to school, young Shirley Crabtree took quite a lot of stick for his name.
Hey, you! Hey! What's your name? Crabtree? What's that about? A tree that grows crabs on it?
Shut up!
No, it's a really bad tree. A crap tree!
Leave me alone!
No, it is a tree that if you have sex with it, you catch crabs.
Luckily, that was too adult a reference for any of us children to understand. Thank God none of these kids know my first name.
Shirley! You forgot your lunchbox!
Thanks, Mum!
He's called Shirley! That's a girl's name!
Shirley!
I still don't feel my sexual tree line got the response it deserved.
My dad was wiser than I realised. By calling me Shirley, he's deflected attention away from my ridiculous surname.
Hit him! Hit the boy with the girl's name!
Yeah, it's a good idea, Francis!
There must be some way I can make them respect me. I know. I will dress up in a silver top hat and a back-to-front old woman swimming costume with a big D on the front. And then I'll bounce off some ropes, hitting people who are deliberately standing in the way with my big fat stomach. That will stop them teasing me. And young Shirley did just that. And the other kids did respect him. And the lesson here is that if you are being bullied at school, then all you have to do is become grossly overweight, put on a back-to-front old woman swimming costume, and bounce off some ropes and hit someone who is deliberately standing in the way with your big fat stomach. And the bullying will end.
So, that's just about the end of the show. Have you enjoyed your stint as a big radio celebrity, Paul? Have I paid you back for all the copying of all the essays?
Yeah, it's been okay, Rich, but... To be honest, I'm glad that it's you, not me, that's ended up doing this. It all seems very exciting, doing 6 episodes of history-related sketches once every 18 months on average. You know, all the tattooed 48-year-old women you can handle.
Oh, no, she left. She's gone off with Terry Wogan. She said she was going to do some tromboning with him or something. Presumably they're going to be doing a rendition of the floral dance or something.
But ultimately, you know... It's a bit shallow, isn't it? Your life seems hollow, Rich. I have a wife and kids, and yet here you are, with no one, just trying to aspire to be as good as a fat dead man who used to pretend to wrestle. Maybe selling suits isn't as glamorous, but at least my suits are real and very reasonably priced. And not like you in your emperor's new clothes.
It's a shame you've taken so long to become eloquent during this show, but sad note, it's you know, just rub it in. It's the end of the show. Right, life's a waste of time. Thanks a lot. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Richard Herring!
Who are you?
I would have thought that was obvious. I am the Pope Finder General!
Blimey, I didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Shut up.
Nice robes, Your Eminence. I know a guy who could knock you up something similar. At a fraction.
Shut up!
Sorry for the delay in getting back to you, Richard. As you might expect, we get a lot of letters from people wanting to be Pope. Most of them lunatics, but yours was brilliant. The Catholic Church, it needs rebranding for the 21st century. We think you're the man for the job.
Yeah, but hold on, what about Pope Benedict?
Hey, that's easily dealt with. Do a Pope John Paul I need us anymore?
Great, well, I'll take the job. Getting to be Pope would feel like a real life's achievement. That's almost as good as being Big Daddy.
So, what do you want your papal name to be?
How about Kevin the First, because he's English, is he?
He's very good, very good.
I'd like to be Pope Richard Herringus the First, or Second, if there's already been one of those.
OK. We just need you to sign this official document, then I will kiss your ring.
Grow up, Paul. He means my papal ring.
I did mean that, yeah. And then you will be Pope!
So I'll be Pope. The minute I've just signed this, I'm going to sign it now.
Hold it right there. I'm Detective Sergeant Pamela Starkey of Shepherd's Bush Police Station, and I'm here to arrest Richard Herring for the murder of his wife, TV's Emma Kennedy.
I didn't murder her. I didn't. She's gone to America to be a showgirl.
No, she hasn't. Emma Kennedy is far too old and ugly to be a showgirl. And in any case, she is barred from ever visiting America due to her support of right-wing political organisations.
She did love them at Werther Twins. She does love them. She is still alive.
Yeah, well, she's missing, and the newspapers are all speculating that it was probably you that did away with her, and that is evidence enough for me and any other right-thinking person.
Hey, Rich, you murdered your wife. You can't be Pope, then.
Oh, come on. You Catholics have turned a blind eye to a lot worse things than that. You know what I'm talking about.
It's not the murder that's the problem. I don't think God ever said anything about that. No. It's the fact that you've been married, and even worse, to a woman. We can't be having that in the Catholic Church. I bid you good day.
No, I'll come back. I want to be Pope. I'd be great at it. I really hate condoms. They just spoil it so bad. Yeah.
Bad luck, Rich. Sorry, bad luck. The Pope Finder General is gone.
Yeah, so come on. There'll be no hanging around with loads of men all having sex with each other where you're going. Prison.
But I didn't kill anyone.
It'll save us a lot of time and bother if you just confess immediately. Otherwise, we will have to organise a search.
All right, it's okay. I did it. I killed her. TV's Emma Kennedy is dead.
Sorry, I just leant on the keyboard. Yeah, sorry.
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late. Did someone say my name?
TV's Emma Kennedy? It's a ghost.
No, I am alive and well.
But where were you, Emma?
You don't have to tell them, Emma. Don't say
it. No, it's okay. I've had some other filming to do. I got a party.
No, it's no one's business but yourself, Emma. Just keep it to yourself.
No, it's okay. I got a part in my family.
Oh, well done. Now everyone knows I'm married to someone who's been in my family. It's so embarrassing.
So you would have admitted to murder rather than have to say your wife was in my family. Yeah, I can understand that.
But what about the poison last week?
It wasn't poison, it was Rohypnol. No, not so I could have sex with her. Emma's the one woman in the world you put Rohypnol in a drink so you can leave her in the pub. Is that a waste of Rohypnol? It's quite expensive.
Well, the police detective seems to have gone anyway, so...
Yeah, it's just disappeared.
She's vanished.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all from this week. We'll be back next week with more of the same bile. Bye! Emma, earn your appearance fee. Read the credits.
That was Then, This Is Now. It was written and performed by Richard Herring, Dan Tetzel, Danny Robbins and me, TV's Emma Kennedy. I've just been working with Robert Lindsay and Zoe Wanamaker, which puts this into some kind of perspective. The songs and music were all done by Christian Riley and the Toll Bundle Martyrs, who were Damien Caldwell, Martin Kane and Charlie Round-Turner. It was produced by Liz Anstey and was a Celebrel production for BBC Radio 2! If anyone needs me, I'll be in my Winnebago.